Larry Inman, thanks for coming on.
David, thank you for the invitation to come over and visit with you and be a part of Interlochen Public Radio.
So Grand Traverse County got some rough news about a month ago.
Right.
Pugsley Correctional Facility is closing. That's in Kingsley. That's a place that employs a lot of people here. Can you do anything about it?
Well, actually, what happened was is that both Senator Schmidt and myself were called into a meeting separately and told about it the day they were kicking out the press release. So we were not aware of the closing. Of course, it was not good news on our part when you lose a major employer in the market. Pugsley employed about 230 people, and about 113 people were actually residents of Grand Traverse County. So better than a half were surrounded around Grand Traverse and northern lower Michigan, and then they just ended up commuting. So we have had several discussions in Lansing and locally, especially with Fife Lake Township that has some of the impacts, like the fire runs and the ambulance runs to the prison, that will have a dramatic impact to them of about $30,000, $40,000 a year. And so Senator Schmidt and I are going to try to go back to Lansing after we get done with our break and see if we can do something for some sort of mandatory notice when you're going to close a prison. And if it's going to be a fairly quick turnaround, then hopefully we can get some impact fees to them, at least for a year or two.
But there's nothing we can do to stop it.
No, that is not a legislative decision. It is an administrative decision. That is between the governor and the director of the Department of Corrections. So, unfortunately, they put in some state-of-the-art equipment over a number of years at a correctional facility over for Pugsley, and we're sad to see it go. And it is a loss of major employment. And a lot of those folks will transition to a prison within an hour or two away, and some will choose to get different employment training and see if they can continue to stay here in the Kingsley area. So, but a lot of them are working right now with the Department of Corrections to get them transferred to another correctional facility, and a lot of them will have probably about an hour drive, and so a number of them could carpool. But it's still a sad situation, but, it's one of those situations where we are seeing less prisoners, in our state correctional facilities. We were up as high as 48,000, now we're as low as about 40,000. And there is a tremendous amount of pressure on the budget, these days in Lansing, and to consolidate, become more efficient for all departments. So, it's likely you're going to see several more, prisons close in the next year or so, because of the decline of the prison population. That's good news for taxpayers, but it's not good news for people that have employment.
Where else could this area turn to replace those jobs?
Well, Networks Northwest is working right now with the Pugsley facility to help retrain those folks if they want to stay in the area and not get transferred to a correction facility. So that's one option. We're hopeful that, after they close in September, by the end of the year, we'll have some indication as to, where those people stand in terms of either being relocated to another facility or, are they under some training program to get reemployed in the market.
Let's talk about, veterans issues briefly. You are the chair of a subcommittee. The Subcommittee on the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. Earlier this year, an audit came out from the Auditor General's office saying that the Grand Rapids Home for Veterans, a veterans facility there, was in disarray, that there are allegations of abuse and neglect. What have you guys done in the state legislature to respond to those allegations?
Well, that's a great question, because that audit caught all of us by surprise. When it did come out, just about every state representative was fairly offended by the results of that survey. And you're exactly right. It showed mismanagement, lack of controls, especially for prescription drugs, lack of attendance when veterans were indicating that they had some sort of complaint that they wanted to file for some sort of reason that those weren't followed up. So the House of Representatives and the State Senate put together a joint hearing committee, and we had hearings for about 2 weeks. And we came out with a state of recommendations, of which have been implemented. One of them is that we have the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs has discharged most of the management people at the Grand Rapids home. And we have hired a new director to come in and implement all the changes that were noted in the audit, as well as recommendations from the House and the Senate. To put back these controls, we actually, before we left, we approved an ombudsman for the Grand Rapids home. So that person would be on duty on a full-time basis to make sure that the veterans are treated properly and they've got any questions or indications of problems, that they're dealt with swiftly. So it was sad to see that that audit came out to the level of severity in some of the issues. But we are working very hard to make sure that those situations don't occur in the next audit. And we believe we've got the right people now in place to make sure that that doesn't happen again.
When we talked in 2014 during the campaign, that first campaign, you characterized yourself as somebody who could help end gridlock in Lansing. That was one of the things you told me.
Right.
How would you rate the job that you've done so far?
Well, if I take a look at what I said I would do and what I accomplished, even though it was with help, because one person can't change Lansing. You got 110 representatives, and we all have different goals, and we all have different people that we represent that might have different needs. But I went down there saying, number one, I need to come back with a roads package. That was very difficult to do. We passed that at the end of the year. Last year, it did involve a tax increase in fuel tax, which will probably be the only tax increase I'll probably ever vote for in the legislature. But we needed new revenue. It was fairly strongly demonstrated that we needed more revenue. We downsized state government. We did increase some fees, but we have a graduated plan over 5 years to put $1.5 billion annually into roads, which you are seeing the effects today driving around northern Michigan, especially South County. M-72 is done, the 31 is done. So that was the big promise. We got it done. A lot of other people had the same promise to fix roads. So we got that behind us. The next thing was, you know, education has taken a hit over the last 5 to 6 years, and I wanted to make sure that we come back and refund education, because they've taken some real hits in terms of downsizing their school system and lack of funding for their schools. And there's a real disparity between per pupil funding between downstate and the northern Michigan market, especially Traverse City. So we've got in the budget a formula called 2X on the base, something I worked with Paul Soma on from the Traverse City Superintendent School area, that what it does is it gives more money to the per pupils in the districts that are in the lower end than you would get in the higher end. And eventually the goal is that there would be parity between the two. So
that increase was part of the budget this year.
Yes. So that was accomplished. That's something I really worked hard on with the governor and the chair of appropriations, Al Pashoka. Community colleges got increases. Universities got increases where they have consistently got decreases over the last 5 years or so. So that's going to lessen, hopefully, the pressure on tuition increases throughout the state. And we need to really reinvest ourselves in education in Michigan, both at K-12 and the community colleges and universities. I'm proud to come back here recently with an announcement that the state has a program called Capital Outlay, and we Northwestern Michigan College put in an application. I work with them very closely. It was a $14.7 million project, and they were going to kick in half, and the state was going to kick in half, but the competition was fierce for that money and that project. But I worked very closely with the governor and, again, with the Appropriations Committee that I sit on, and we got that approved. And so Tim Nelson, the president of NMC, is very happy. We're going to plan some sort of public celebration here soon about, you know, the capital projects that we're going to do at NMC over the next year, a new innovative learning center and fixing up some older buildings, those kinds of things. So it's going to be a whole different footprint down there. So I was glad to bring back some money to the local area for community colleges. And the big one of the other big things was veterans benefits. And, you know, the state had invested almost $1 million in marketing and working with our veterans officers to get veterans to understand and come in and apply for the veterans that they for the benefits that they really have coming to them and make them aware of them. So we've sort of done a good job marketing it. Now we've got a wait list of about 30 to 40 days. So when we get back to Lansing, we're going to have to figure out how we can increase the staff level to accommodate for that wait list, which is a good problem. So, you know, I wanted to make sure that we took care of our veterans. We got the road package done. We got increases for education. So we've got some other things we're working on, hopefully, for the next term. And one of them is, you know, Munson in Hospital's got like a 4 or 5 page waiting list for nurses. And there's just, you know, a problem in the whole industry right now for hospitals because there aren't enough nurses in the system to accommodate all the needs of the hospitals around the state. So therefore, they're overworking the nurses. They're mandatory overtime. So my goal when I get back to the legislature is to find out how we can work with the community colleges and the universities to put more nursing students out in the learning environment and get them employed in these hospitals. So that's one of the goals that I've got coming up for the following term. But overall, I think, you know, for a freshman just learning the system and working with those folks down in Lansing to get things done and bring some stuff back to our district that really met. Had a good impact. I think I did pretty good.
Another thing you talked about in 2014 was that you were somebody who could bring people together to compromise on some key issues to get certain things done. Let's talk about one of those education issues. Earlier this year, a bill reforming Detroit Public Schools passed. You voted yes for it. You know, it passed with zero support from Democrats. I mean, that's the motion went through, but it wasn't exactly a work of compromise between the parties. Is compromise possible right now in Lansing?
I think it is. There's a few issues that both Republicans and Democrats seem to be stuck on. And if you take a look at the difference between the viewpoints of Democrats and Republicans, in most cases, there's a small difference, and it has to do with principle. And I did support, the mayor of Detroit came in and spoke several times, and I supported his Detroit Education Commission, where the Republican side did not.
That was the governor-supported plan
Initially the governor and the Senate Majority Leader supported the what was called the Detroit Education Commission, and that would be operated by the mayor of Detroit, and it would give more local control over the Detroit public school system.
And just to be clear, that's the plan that did not pass.
Correct. Okay. Yeah, and it ended up that we did some compromising, but that was not one of them, which I was not happy about. But the speaker controls what gets on the floor and what gets voted on. So that particular issue, Speaker Cotter was pretty firm that he wanted to go with something similar to the Detroit Education Commission, but it wouldn't be as much local control. So that's something that would be one point that there was a separation of opinions. And, you know, it's on one side, you know, when we allocate $670 million to Detroit Public Schools, pay down their debt, give them enough operating capital, and they still keep their foundation allowance. And we set up some committees, academic oversight committees, financial review committees, those kinds of things. So hopefully they get back on a better track and don't come back on another request for additional funds. So that's the goal. And the difference between really the Republican plan and the Democrat plan was, you know, the mayor's Detroit Education Commission, which I supported. But in the end, it wasn't on the board for a vote. So you do the best you can and pass the package. You know, not doing anything was not wasn't acceptable. Having them file bankruptcy was not acceptable. I mean, you would be just basically relying on a judge to order the legislature to pay all their bills and their debts and, you know, whatever else they have and liabilities without any controls. So that's one thing the legislature did agree on, is that we wanted to have some controls if we were going to fund that amount and get them out of their situation. And you got to ask, you know, why did the legislature have to do that? Well, it's the responsibility of the legislature through legislation in the Constitution that the Michigan House of Representatives and the state legislature and the state Senate are responsible for the financial well-being of all public schools. So it was either let them file bankruptcy and just take what the and have no controls and take what the judge had ordered us to pay, or we could manage our own system, pay off the debt, give them enough operating capital, and have some sort of guidelines and controls so they eventually get back on the right track. They're in a tough situation down there in Detroit. They got a lot of schools that have closed. They've got 47,000 students left in Detroit. Half of them are in public schools. Half are in charter schools. Half the Detroit schools are failing. Half the charter schools are failing. So they have a big task down in Detroit to turn that whole situation around. And I really got to commend the mayor, because he understands, with my conversations with him, he can't have a successful city without a successful public school system. And that's why he wanted to get involved and have more local control and take some level of responsibility for the success of Detroit public schools, which, you know, who else would want to take that accountability? He was willing to step up and do that. So I'm sad that didn't get done, but in the end, we do have a package that does fund the school systems, does fund teachers, does give some hope for kids in the Detroit public schools to succeed.
One of the more controversial issues that passed this year was an elections reform package of legislation. There was something that opponents were calling a gag rule that was part of it that would have limited the ability of municipalities and school districts mm-hmm. to talk about millage votes in the upcoming weeks of an election. That ended up kind of being shelved because of a court ruling and because of basically an agreement by the state that they wouldn't enforce it. But what I remember was there was a quote from you, mm-hmm. I believe, where you said that you voted yes for it, but you weren't sure of everything that was in this package. Am I misremembering that, or what happened?
No, I could be a little more succinct on that.
So what I remember is that there was a quote from you saying that you voted yes, but mm-hmm. you didn't know everything that was in the package. What happened?
Well, there was that's kind of an explanation to that. Because that comment is that we were pretty late at night. It was around midnight or so. And they do keep you late, when there's pressing issues to get things done. And, so it was about midnight and we were briefed on the, elections package, which did not include that, by the way, that amendment basically, would disallow, someone that wanted to advocate for public information, like a county or a city or a local unit of government, to send out public information within a certain period of time. And what it did it closed that time period. And so we weren't aware of that amendment. And what happened was is that the bill was up for a vote, and then just prior to the vote, Representative Lyons put in an amendment, which we all assumed was minor in nature. Otherwise, we probably would have been advised on the floor of what this change was. That's typically how it works. So, if it's a word change or a very minor change, they would just let the amendment go. But if it's substantial, normally they would have someone walk around and explain the amendment.
But it didn't happen.
No, and it was like, okay, they put in an amendment, and then all of a sudden They put the vote on the board, and nobody, as far as I knew, asked what that amendment was. And that was a good lesson to learn for me as a freshman. So we ended up voting yes on that package, and the next day we found out what the amendment was. So we were all pretty upset about it. We contacted the speaker's office and asked that we set up some legislation to reverse it, you know, immediately. And we were hearing from all our local units of government. And so I did not like the amendment. And so we were preparing to reverse it when the court system said, well, we're going to throw this out. And so we're basically at that point in time, the House decided to let the court system just, it was our belief that they were just going to remove that from that piece of legislation as unconstitutional, you know, from freedom of speech, that kind of a thing. So we held with, the court system. We told the members of the public that called our office. We supported the court decision on this. We worked with the Michigan Association of Counties and the Michigan Township Association of Municipal Leagues that, you know, if it was overturned in the court, we would put together a bill to take it out. So it was one of those things where as a freshman, you learn a lesson. You know, it's a big learning curve when you go down to Lansing and you assume people, no matter what side of the aisle, are doing the right thing. But since then, you know, every amendment, I'll stop and I'll run to the clerk and I'll ask what the amendment is. So there isn't going to be another time where there's going to be an amendment that doesn't get my look at and review before we vote.
In concluding, why should voters give you another 2 years?
Well, I'll tell you what, I love my job. I love representing the Grand Traverse County citizens. We've got some 90,000 people that I represent. I think I've done a pretty good job in going to Lansing and doing the things they wanted me to do in terms of voting for increased education, getting the roads plan, you know, working with veterans. I think those are key issues for voters. You know, in terms of accessibility and transparency, you know, it's surprising the number of people from the district that come down and visit with me in the office, either regarding a piece of legislation or just to tell me their viewpoints while they were down there. And then we have everyone that calls the office that would like to speak with me. We set up appointments. I usually get in town Thursday night. So Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, when we're in session, I make appointments to meet with these folks, either at their business or for coffee. So we've met with somewhere close to about 1,200 people in the last 18 months. So people like that I'm accessible and I'm willing that, you know, no matter who they are or what their issue is, I'm willing to meet with them. And I think that's important to the residents of the area, that they've got someone that's willing to sit down and talk with them and follow up on a lot of things that, you know, that they have concerns with. So I enjoy the job. I work hard at it and I try to do the best I can to represent the folks. And I'd like to accomplish more when we get down to Lansing. I'd like to continue to increase education funding. I'd like to take care of veterans, and we need probably a little better plan for, you know, the outreach program for our veterans for benefits, to upgrade that staffing level so they get, you know, a quicker turnaround time. So there's always something going on, especially the nurses' situation. I'd like to see you know, more nurses in the pipeline to fill these positions. Teachers, I just spoke with a teacher a couple days ago and had coffee with her, a retired teacher, and she was happy to meet with me. And, you know, she said, you know, if you can get retired teachers to come back and have an allowable that they can come back and teach, you know, absent of their, you know, not paying them a pension or health care, whatever. But a lot of them want to come back and work part-time. And she's saying that, you know, there's some laws that that won't allow that. So we both agreed, you know, after breakfast that this is something I really need to work with, because, you know, they're the most experienced teachers, our retirees. Some would like to come back on a part-time basis and help out, especially with, you know, vacations and with people that call in sick, those kinds of things. So there's more things I want to work on in the district. So that's why I'd like to, that's my message when I'm going door to door, tell I care about them. I want to continue to do the work of the people, listen to them, and follow up on them. And we've got some goals we'd still like to accomplish.
Larry Inman, thanks for making time.
Thank you very much for allowing me to come in.